This week on the FSF Podcast, we welcome voice actor Lindsay Russo.
Hello and welcome to the FSF Podcast. Our guest today is best known, and I will use her words from her website because why not? Best known for kicking butt and quoting Shakespeare. But when this Army veteran turned actor isn't rearranging faces or reciting prose, you have certainly heard her voice in games and shows like Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, Transformers, War for Cybertron. There's Starfield, God of War, Ragnarok, Fallout 76. I could literally keep on going. The list is long. There's so many cool things that Lindsay has done here today. So anyway, guys, I am very excited and proud to welcome Lindsay Russo to the FSF Podcast to sit down and talk a little nerdy with us. Welcome to the show, Lindsay.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. As I was saying pre-show, when I saw your page came across on a Twitter feed for me, it's one of the good things that Twitter has actually done in the last few months. It suggested something that I would actually like and would go and not go, oh, God, why is that on my wall?
I know, right?
Yeah. And so when you came up on my Twitter feed, I was like, I need to talk to this person. This person's got some really cool stuff. And then I went to your website and I checked out your IMDb page. And I was like, absolutely need to talk to this person. But first things first, because we are geeks and we like to talk about nerdy things.
We do.
Now, some may call it stalking. We like to call it research. When we go and we look at the other person's social media page. So, you know, as one does, you peruse the page, kind of see what they're about, kind of get a feel for who they are, what they are. But one thing really stood out to me, not only from your own website, but also with your social media pages. You have some really cool nerdy shirts.
And I do. I'm wearing one right now. There we go.
Nice. Excellent.
With my D&D water bottle. There it is.
I love it. Yeah, that's fantastic. Yeah, so as you were going through it, I was like, wow, she's got some really cool shirts. And you've got a really awesome Captain Marvel jacket. And I was like, that is so cool.
I'm very excited about that. Yes.
As well, you should be. That's friggin' awesome. So here's my question. Now that I've gotten all that out of my system, well, mostly. When you go look for a new nerd shirt, is it just something that's spur of the moment and you're like, oh, that's cool, I got to have it? Or is there some plan and some thought that goes into it? Like, I'm looking for this particular shirt, this particular, you know, nerdiverse, whatever it may be.
A little bit of both. Sometimes, like, you know, if you're at a convention, like I was at Comic-Con several years ago and I saw the Captain Marvel jacket and I was like, I have to have that. And she's probably my favorite superhero, but other times, you know, algorithms pop up and you're like, ooh, I really like that. I want to get that. But in general, I'm usually on the lookout for Star Wars or D&D or any, I'm definitely a Marvel girl. Any like really cool, badass female Marvel superheroes. I'm a big fan of Captain Marvel, Rogue, Jessica Jones, things like that. Doctor Who, anything Doctor Who, I am down for that. It's a little bit of both. Something catches my eye, or I am on eBay trying to find the Captain Marvel 2008 comic book cover art on a t-shirt because I do not want the movie. I mean, I love you, Scarlett Johansson, but I don't want you. I want the original cover art. So sometimes it's a little bit of both.
Sure. Okay. Well, that makes sense to me because as you can see behind me, I'm a big Funko Pop collector.
Yes, Funkos, yes.
Yeah, I absolutely love Funkos. Star Wars is my favorite universe. That's where I like to hang out. So I find myself like I'm going and I'm searching for this particular Star Wars Funko and I'm looking for this and looking for that. Mm-hmm. And I find that I've gone in looking for this, but I end up buying this, and this because although I may have found this, yeah, that's how they get you. They get you by looking for this. And then you find all these other things. Like I was on Amazon the other day and I was looking for, I think it was back when I was looking for my Cad Bane.
Good Funko. One. Yes.
Yeah. Big fan of Cad Bane. And I was looking for that Funko Pop and I logged in and they had like things on clearance for like Funkos for like $2 or $3 that I didn't have. that were from Marvel. And I'm like, well, I wasn't here for Marvel today, but I was kind of, I came in purely looking for Star Wars, and I came, which ones are they again?
Yep. The algorithms work.
Oh, they totally do. Yeah. I got a Civil War Vision Funko Pop.
Yes.
Sam as Captain America, you know, from going from the Falcon to being Captain America. And what was the other one? There was one more that I got. Oh, Baron Zemo. Yeah. So, I was pretty happy. They were all like $3 a piece with on Prime with free shipping. I was like, I can't go wrong.
You can't.
So, yeah, it just gives me, you know, now I'm at the point now that my Funkos are like funneling off the shelves onto the floor in front of the shelf there.
Like I need another.
And I have to. Yeah, I got to go get another shelf now. So it is what it is. Right. But. So anyway. Yeah, so that I was curious about that because it was like every picture where if it wasn't something like a shot from a still from wasn't a movie a photo scene or something.
That's my go-to. It's like I'm a t-shirt and Chucks kind of girl, you know? It's like I've got an entire wardrobe of just geeky shirts, and then I have like my audition clothes and my like, you know, I need to look nice clothes.
Fantastic. Well played. I dig. All right. So let's go back to the basics of our show, because for my show, usually the first question I like to ask is not that one. That one was just, I had to ask about that one because that was like the first thing I saw and I was like, and I started noticing. But typically the very first thing that we ask any of our guests is to talk about the origins of how they got to be the person that we have across from us at the virtual table. You know, how they got from there to here. Oh, so man. In the story of Lindsay, how did you get going in the acting world? How did you get from there to here?
Yeah, I mean, that's honestly a really long story. So I'll give the cliff notes. I grew up acting.
Okay.
I grew up with theater and with music. That was my life all growing up since I was very young. I was performing on stage, either in theater productions or in music productions, and then, you know, like many of us, I went to college, ended up in the army. And then when I got out of the army, didn't really know what to do with my life. So I was like, let's do journalism because I've been doing this in the military. After I did that for a while, got my master's, was working. And I was like, you know what? I was just always happiest when I was performing. So I went back to acting and I did theater again for about 6 years full time. And then transitioned into voiceover and on-camera work, and then just kind of kept going. And voiceover has been really good for me. On-camera has been a little bit slower. But I've been, you know, kind of come full circle to where I was back when I was in high school.
Yeah, so that's a great answer.
That's the Cliff Notes version.
No, that's okay. I like the Cliff Notes version. It kind of hits all the high points. Because, you know, I think that when, you know, we've talked to a couple other people that started off in one direction, even though they had a theater background or dancing class or some type of something in the arts. Okay. We'll just leave it at that. So where they were somewhere in the arts, but they went off to go do this thing.
Right.
And it just kind of like it, for whatever reason, it just, that's where they fell back to, because that was because it was comfortable. That's what you knew. And
it's what you knew. It's what really made you happy. And, you know, like after the army, after, you know, spending a year in Iraq in combat and then spending several years doing really in-depth emotional investigative stories as a journalist, it was taking its toll on my mental health. You know, I just was not in a healthy place. And, performing is what always made me truly happy. It was my escape. It was my release. And I realized I needed to make a decision in my life to be healthy and happy. And even if I was broke and having to work a million jobs, I knew it was the right thing for me because of everything I had been through.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. You know, I think if you have something that is kind of like your safe space and some place where you're able to go that you feel comfortable and makes you happy. And especially if you're able to do it for a living, I think that's fantastic. That's like the cherry on top.
It is.
You know,
it really is.
You know, because most people are going to be able to, you know, they'll go back to it, but they're doing it. And this is by no means a knock on local playhouses, but you know, they're going to be at the local level doing that. I mean, they're still doing what they enjoy. And yes. So kudos to them for having the stones to be able to get up there.
Some people doing it as a hobby is enough. And I did that for years and years and years. You know, I love community theater. I did a lot of community theater. And for some people, having their family and their full-time day job and then doing them on the side is enough for them. For me, I knew it wasn't going to be enough for me. I knew it needed to be more than just a hobby, but I knew it was going to be hard. And it is hard. This is not an easy industry to get into. It takes grit. It takes determination. It takes being willing to be super broke for a long time and be willing to work, you know, those multiple jobs and hustle, 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 hustle until you can get to a point where you're making a living doing it. But, you know, the running joke in the acting community is if you can do anything else and make a living, do it, because this is not easy.
Right.
And no one should think it is, because it is one of the hardest things out there to do. But if you are that type of personality that is willing to grind, it can be really rewarding.
Okay. So let's follow that up with this.
Yeah.
So you're going through that, you're grinding. You're obviously were willing to put in the work, do the hustle, mm-hmm. and not the dance that you maybe you did the dance too. But you know, but you were willing to put in the work. When was the first moment where you thought, I might actually be able to do this?
Yeah. I mean, I think there was always part of me that knew I was going to be able to do this, but finally realizing I was able to make a living doing just this mm-hmm. was probably about 5 years ago. I was finally, maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I was finally able to quit all my side jobs and realize, oh, I'm paying my bills just through acting. Okay. I'm doing this. I'm really doing this. And that was amazing. And that was after probably 10 years of theater and voiceover and on camera and working side jobs. And then finally getting to a place where I had enough work coming in that I could quit those side jobs and still pay my rent and pay my bills. And it's still very stressful because obviously this is a very uncertain industry. You could have a really good year and then obviously, you know, then suddenly everything could dry up on you. But I've been really lucky the past 5-6 years. It's just been like, okay, each year has been a little bit better than the last year and I'm still moving forward. So hopefully it keeps going in this direction.
Okay. I think that's great. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people that we talk to, you know, there's that defining moment where it's not always that smack in the face, right? Where it's just, oh my God, this is what's happening. Look at this big job. This is the thing. Usually it's that they've been doing a lot of jobs back to back to back.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You look at, oh, I've had a bunch of sessions the past couple months and I haven't had to go, like I was a brand ambassador for a couple different companies and doing in-store demos and stuff like that. And it was like, I've had to not do that because I've had so many sessions. Maybe I don't have to do that anymore. It's kind of what it comes down to. It's not like, oh my God, this big job is paying me a ton of money. Like I know that there's people out there. That has not been me. I've never had one job that's like, yeah, it's been just incremental, a bunch of little jobs and they all add up to eventually get to the point where you're stable.
Yeah. I think the majority of people that we've talked to where there is the oh my God, look at this big job. I think that's more the exception than the rule.
It really is. I think it really is. Yeah. Yeah. Because anyone who wants, especially in voiceover, anyone who wants to make this a career, you're having to do everything. Like video games and animation are just like the cream of the crop, right? That's the stuff you love to do, you want to do. I've been really lucky to do. But the day-to-day is like, I'm doing a ton of corporate narration and commercials, and dubbing and things like that, that, you know, they're not super sexy, but you do enough of them and they add up and they pay your bills. So you have the flexibility to keep honing your skills and then do the stuff you love to do.
I know that all makes sense. It's part of the climb. It's getting to the things that you want to get to.
Right.
You know, you pay. So yeah, no, that's fantastic. Okay. So you kind of mentioned this a few minutes ago. And so this is a kind of a an easy segue into this question, because it's not all that often that we get someone who proclaims themselves to be a geeky badass, but also from everything I've seen has the chops to back it up. But I also noticed, and you mentioned it, that you worked your way through a journalism degree, and not just any journalism degree, a master's in journalism. That's a lot of schooling. So what is it about journalism that you enjoyed it so much that you pursued it to the master's level?
Yeah. So when I was in the Army, so my undergrad was sociology and anthropology. So I've always really enjoyed studying people and cultures and things like that.
Nice.
So when I was in the Army, I was a combat photographer and a journalist, public affairs specialist. So I was documenting, I was writing articles, I was writing press releases, I was taking photographs, video, all of that, different things of combat, humanitarian, everything. So when I got out, like so many people who get out of the military, especially if they're combat vets, you kind of have that moment where you're like, now what? And I was like, well, I've been doing this journalism thing. I kind of really enjoyed it. So I was like, you know what? Let's try graduate school. And so I applied to a bunch of different places, decided to go to UC Berkeley. And while I was there, I ended up becoming an associate producer at PBS Frontline, which had a partnership with UC Berkeley. And so I worked on probably half a dozen different documentaries. And then I was doing my own research. And I really, really enjoyed the work that I was doing. I enjoyed digging into these hot button issues that took a lot of work and a lot of research. And when you bring corruption to light, you know, bad people, you know, reveal what they've been doing, it's really rewarding, but it's also very stressful. And so that's what I really enjoyed about that. I really enjoyed telling stories that not many people had heard before, but that really deserved to be told. And could make a difference in people's lives. You know, when you tell a story that breaks something into the spotlight, it can help get justice for people who maybe couldn't find justice in the legal system or the justice system. So, you know, that's what really attracted me to that line of work. And even though I've left journalism behind, it's still part of me. You know, I've written a couple pilots, I've written a couple screenplays that all deal with either stories I worked on when I was a journalist or experiences that I had that I'm currently trying to sell right now. So definitely it is still a part of who I am, a writer, an investigator, you know, even, you know, I serve on the board of directors for a couple of different nonprofits, doing media work for them, dealing with the journalists, hosting panels, doing media training. So it's always there. It's just kind of found a new, it's found a new way to express itself in my current line of work.
That's interesting. Okay. Yeah, I have talked to a couple other people who have also worked in journalism. And it's always kind of been interesting to me. Now, and I'm by no means parlaying this into what I do now, but I never thought that I would be someone who wrote anything. And I find myself the last couple of years, I've become a freelance writer, and I'm now doing... But I'm writing more of the, hey, here's what I think of the Marvels movie, or here's what, you know, I'm more of a nerdy writer. But I do appreciate your approach to this, because I think that if you're going to have a topic that people are going to pay attention to, you know, and I think you hit it on the head, having the opportunity, having the desire, the heart behind it to want to be able to push that story up into the limelight, where it's going to have that type of reaction where people can get closure on different topics. You know, I think that that's a really cool experience to be able to have, you know, just based on how you were talking about it. And it's not something that I can correlate with personally, because I haven't done that. Like I said, my writing is more about, you know, why Rockstar Games is screwing people over with their Grand Theft Auto 6 ideas.
I mean, you know, AI voices. I mean, that's kind of one of the big things that I do. I'm on the board of directors for the National Association of Voice Actors. And one of the big things that we're working on is AI protections for voice actors. I'm on the SAG-AFTRA video game negotiating committee, and we're working on AI protections for voice actors, because, you know, it's happening now. And we've seen with all the layoffs at the video game industries, you know, 1900 people at Activision Blizzard, which is now contested by the FTC because maybe they violated labor law in doing that. It's really hitting home across the creative arts. You know, we've got the lawsuits happening with Getty Images and the New York Times. It's a really interesting and kind of scary time for anyone who is a creative to see what's going to happen. Is AI going to take all of our jobs, or, you know, it's a scary time, but there is some hope.
Yeah, no, it's interesting you bring AI into the conversation because there is so much going on with that right now. And that's one of the things that you know, on this side of the fence, one of the things that we have noticed is not only is it affecting, you know, the video games and things like that, but we're hearing it and seeing it in commercials. We're hearing it and seeing it in different type of advertisements and things along those lines, where you're pretty sure that that person did not do that commercial, or you're pretty sure that I can't remember the actor's name, but he posted a video on one of his social media pages. It was either Twitter or TikTok. I just remember it started with a T, but he showed a video of him doing a commercial, but it wasn't him.
Yeah.
And, you know,
a couple of things that I know Scarlett Johansson and Tom Hanks both, I think, have lawsuits out about commercials that came out using them that they did not do. You know, the robocalls that went out a couple weeks ago that were AI versions of Joe Biden's voice, you know, and now that has been banned. The FCC put out a rule saying AI voices and robocalls is now banned. So, it is definitely the time where, yes, there's a lot of lawsuits, but those could take forever. And so really, you know, please email, call your representative. There's a couple bills going forward right now, the No Fakes Act, fighting for a national right to publicity to protect the right for you to own your face and likeness and voice, so people can't use it either if you're an entertainer to exploit you, or if you are just a regular person, for fraud. You know, we've seen it with people, pretending to be someone to get access to bank records, to blackmail parents. It's just, there's been some really scary instances. So yes, it is time for people to make sure that they are awake and aware of what's going on.
Okay. No, I think that's very cool. With everything that's been going on, especially with the actor strike and writer strike, coming off that. And that was obviously one of the big hot button topics coming out of that. And, you know, that was, seeing some of the things that have happened past that, you know, and people who were like, oh, you know, and I'm not going to call anybody out by name, but there's one larger YouTube creator who recently was making a movie, a deep fake movie with using Mark Hamill's voice and face. And I was like, well, that's rather brave.
Yeah. I expect a lawsuit to come anytime soon.
Mark commented on his socials that he absolutely had not given permission for his name and face. But, you know, because even the guy was trying to make the argument, well, it's a fan movie, it's not for profit, it's all these things. And I'm like, yeah, but when you're using somebody as famous as Mark Hamill in your project, it automatically gives people the assumption that Mark Hamill is on board with this, backing it somewhere somehow.
Right.
So yeah, I'm personally hoping the guy gets sued into the ground, but that's a whole nother topic. We can talk about that off camera. All right. So let's move on from that, because that's a whole other thing. And I'll start building a soapbox, and nobody needs that kind of drama in their day. All right. So again, while out searching the interwebs, I also noticed on your own website that you mentioned that you are a trained singer as well.
Yes.
Now, in our interviews, we've discovered that a lot of people who are involved in voice work have a deep connection to music.
Yes.
One form or another, either as an instrumentalist, as a vocalist, as a songwriter themselves, or whatever it may be. There's some musical background of some kind. So how do you think a musical background benefits you in your selected line of work?
Oh my gosh, so many ways. For one, as a singer, knowing how to utilize your instrument. knowing your range, knowing how I used to teach singing. Now I teach voice classes, and I'm especially passionate about vocal health, proper breath control and breath support. So knowing how to utilize your instrument, knowing how to protect your voice. I do so many screamy, yelly, die sessions, knowing how to properly support that, make sure your throat is relaxed, knowing how to develop different characters based on knowing where your placement is in your voice, you know, things like that. The other thing is that a lot of voiceover work is very rhythmic based. So anyone who does dubbing, anyone who does localized, you know, JRPGs, so much of dubbing work, you know, you're having to match words with flaps, with mouth flaps.
Be it, yeah.
I do live action. So you're having to match that with a lot of localized video games, you know, video games that are released in one language and then translated to English. For a lot of those, you're having to match the timing of the original performance,
right,
in English. And so they'll play it and you have to hear it. You have to hear the rhythm. You have to hear, see how long it is and match it in some cases perfectly. To like the minute second. And so having a background in singing and music is so beneficial in this type of work, that yes, some of my closest friends all come from music backgrounds, be it opera. You know, I did opera musical theater, or, you know, one of my dear friends is a former punk singer and he does creature voices. You know, one of my friends is a metal singer, you know, so she knows how to do all the crazy, yelly, screamy stuff as well. So I would say absolutely having some sort of singing or music background is only going to help you in this.
Yeah, that makes sense because, you know, like you said, there's the knowing how to use your voice, protect your voice, how to safely distort or project,
mm-hmm.
you know, all kind of makes sense to me, but yeah. it's one of those things that when, you know, cause this morning we released our 172nd interview. So it's just one of those things that as you're kind of going through it after 170 something interviews, you start going, oh,
the pattern.
There's a pattern catching on here. There's a lot of musicians.
Yeah.
And I think when it clicked in probably for the most for me was when we were interviewing Rob Paulson.
Yes.
And talking with Rob, and I was unaware of his musical background, and he started talking about it, and all of a sudden it was just kind of like, and he started talking about the musicality of voice work.
Yes.
And yep. and being able to, you know, use the timing and the rhythm of music is, you know, it translates over into the voice booth. And I was like, oh.
Oh, yeah, well, and then just listening to him 20 years later, still being able to sing the State Capitol song, you know,
right.
You can do that at the drop of a hat. And I don't know anyone who doesn't have a musical background who could pull that off, you know?
No, there's no way. they'd have been sunk for sure. All right. Very cool. So we can't have all this talk with a geeky badass without covering a few topics that are at least a little bit geeky. We've talked about a whole sure. lot of other things and kind of tiptoed around some of the work that you do. So here's a couple of fast flying questions. So I mentioned earlier, and I think you kind of answered this earlier, but we're going to ask it again anyway. So I mentioned earlier, I'm a massive Star Wars fan. That's where my nerd flag flies. Where does your nerd flag fly?
It definitely started with Star Wars. So my dad was, so I'm a Gen Xer. My dad was a massive Star Wars fan, and I have a connection to it. So my parents are retired National Park Rangers, and my dad was working in Death Valley in the 70s. And he tells the story of like this rickety production showing up with these like, you know, little trailers and everything. And they're used to like big productions, you know, shooting in Death Valley, and just this rinky-dink production shows up with, you know, this car that's got mirrors under it. And they're like, they need to put all these little kids in like hoodies with you know, battery operated lights in their eyes. And they're like, what is this thing called? Star Wars? Oh yeah, that's going to do well. And he remembers watching the first episode in theaters, and it literally just like, he was like, this is going to revolutionize filmmaking.
Right.
But he got to work with, I mean, no one's going to remember who he is. He's, you know, gave a couple interviews, but he got to work on, you know, some of the land speeder scenes, and the car would overheat because it was Death Valley and they push it up. So all the pickup scenes that weren't shot in Tunisia were shot in Death Valley. And if you go to Death Valley, they've got, you know, they can tell you where to go to see some of the areas where Star Wars was shot. So that, I was raised with that. So Star Wars definitely my first fandom. But then, you know, as a kid, I read the Lord of the Rings series and I read The Hobbit. Mm-hmm. And so that kind of started just, you know, I was always just a huge fan of sci-fi and fantasy. And I've always been kind of an escapist. So I've always, you know, if I'm watching television or film, I want to watch comedy or sci-fi or fantasy. I don't want to watch just straight dramas. You know, I love a good mystery too. I'll watch, you know, a procedural.
Sure, sure.
But I don't want to watch straight dramas. You know, I want, my life is stressful enough. I want to escape to a different universe, to a different world, to a different realm. And so it started with Star Wars and then definitely like the Lord of the Rings, the Tolkien, you know, era. And then I honestly didn't get into comic books until I got into video games a little bit in the military. When I was in Iraq, everyone was playing Halo and Madden. We'd have like, you know, LAN parties where we were running cables to each other's rooms to play.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I really didn't get into games and comic books until after I had gotten out of the military. And then kind of really got into it when Kelly Sue DeConnick released the rebooted Captain Marvel. I mean, I was just blown away because here was this badass military veteran who was a massive Star Wars geek. So I loved the movies. I really did. I loved the Marvels. Please go watch it. Watch Ms. Marvel. Watch the Marvels. It's fantastic. But in the comic books, her cat's name is Chewie because Claire Danvers is a massive Star Wars geek in the comics. And I was just like, this is great. She's a military veteran. She's a Star Wars geek. I love this so much. And then I read all of the Jessica Jones books and all of the Jane Foster Thor. And so I have to say, I really got into Marvel. I never really got into DC. Few things here and there. I really always felt Marvel was on the cutting edge of diversity and representation within the geek community. And that's always been really important to me as female representation, especially now as a military veteran, seeing that women are just not really represented in these badass roles. And yes, DC gives us Wonder Woman and, you know, Batwoman and Batgirl, which will never be released. But it's like Marvel gave us Captain Marvel and Rogue and Storm and Kamala Khan. And, you know, they gave us a Muslim superhero and, you know, just all these amazing badass women that I just really gravitated to that. And then, you know, fantasy wise, I mean, I read all the Witcher books and then came to Game of Thrones a little bit later, read all those books. And then The Expanse was something I watched the show, read the entire series, absolutely adored The Expanse. It is probably some of the best sci-fi out there, in my opinion. Love Star Wars, but if you have not watched and read The Expanse, go do it. You're also going to watch it and read it and be like, oh my God, I think that's kind of where Earth is headed right now. and then, you know, of course, my D&D, you know, I played a little bit growing up. Again, I was a Gen Xer. And so that was kind of back in the day when like, oh, you're a girl, you can't play D&D. So I really got into D&D when I moved to LA. And, you know, started playing with the home group and then during COVID was streaming it all the time. And now I'm just like, I have my two home games that I just absolutely adore. I have way more dice than is probably healthy for a person to have. I do have a dice problem. So now I kind of run the gamut I really love good storytelling. And I love good storytelling that is done in like the sci-fi and fantasy genres because it allows you to explore things which are outside the realm of reality. You know, I am the biggest Whovian. I adore Doctor Who. I have seen every episode of Doctor Who. And some people think it's like super campy. I just love British television in general. And so if you appreciate British TV, you understand why Doctor Who is the way it is. But I just love that you can jump in these episodes and just get taken to a different world, a different time period, and just immerse yourself in that and kind of
absolutely.
Your own, you know, my day to day is super stressful. Just let those problems go away and just enjoy the ride while it's there. I could keep going. I have so much to talk about when it comes to geeky content.
I love it. This is great. This is great conversation because I identify with a lot of what you just said.
Yeah.
Because I watch some drama here and there. My wife likes to watch like murder mystery, police dramas, those type of things.
Yeah.
And that's fine. But after a little bit, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go back to my Star Wars or,
right.
I actually did try to get into The Expanse. I'm only like two episodes in right now.
I would say the first couple episodes are super dense. The same thing was like, So I would say I had to definitely rewatch it because I watched the show first, then read the books. The first couple episodes are definitely very dense. They're throwing a lot of lore at you that can be really hard to process. Stay with it. Just stay with
it. Okay. I will take that advice. That's the same advice I give people.
I started Game of Thrones and got like three episodes in and was like, I don't get it. It's just like, it's murder for murder's sake, sex for sex sake. Once I got about halfway through season one, I was like, okay, now I get it. And then I read the books and was like, now I really get it. Okay.
So that's another show where I was like, you know, murder for murder's sake, sex for sex.
It literally took me probably about six episodes. I tried it and then stopped for like a couple years. And then I had a roommate who was like, oh my God, please watch Game of Thrones. And I was like, by then, I think about four or five seasons had come out. So I was like, okay, we'll sit down, we'll binge it. I begrudgingly got through like the first half of season one. And then I was like, okay, now I can, you know, and I'm that person that's just like, I was in the military. I was in combat. I have no problem with violence, with any of that. But like, if it doesn't seem to be supporting the plot, I have a problem. Right. If you're just killing people willy-nilly or just like randomly having sex with people, I'm like, oh, you're just doing this for sensationalism. And that's how I felt Game of Thrones started. Right. But once I got into it, I was kind of like, okay, now I see the intrigue and the duplicitousness and all the different parts that are going on. I mean, it's definitely not my top fandom at all. But I did enjoy it once I went through and read all the books, I did enjoy it. But it's not one of those that I would go back and rewatch. I don't think like Star Wars, I've watched a billion times. You know, there's other like books I've reread I've reread The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit half a dozen times. So yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I think that I skipped out on it after just the first couple episodes because it was just gratuitous violence.
It really was. Just because the first, like three it was just kind of like just gratuitous. Yeah. And once I made myself get past that, I will say they definitely go further in the show, I think, for sensationalism than they do in the books. Like the books definitely didn't go as far as the show did, which is really funny because if you look at stuff like The Boys, you know, I read the whole graphic novel of The Boys and was like, there's no way they're going to turn this into a show. And they did, but they tempered it down a little bit. So if you've read the graphic novel, you know that The Boys TV show definitely pulled back a little bit, where I feel like Game of Thrones did the opposite, where George R.R. Martin did this amazing thing and didn't really quite go into the amount of detail that they threw out on the screen for you. So,
right. And then if you hadn't read the books and you watched The Boys and you're like, whoo, well, that's a little spicy.
Yes. It was even worse than the graphic novel. Okay. Yeah. Same thing with when they decided to adapt Sandman. I was like, how are they going to adapt Sandman? I mean, like there's like a massacre at a diner. And then I was like, oh, they did it. They did the massacre at the diner. And then The Boys did the giant orgy scene. And I was like, okay.
And there we go. Yeah, absolutely.
There we go. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, no, that's cool. I like I said, I identify with a lot of what you said, especially because when you started talking about wanting that escapism and you know, giving these shows a little extra try, that actually makes sense because that's how I always explain people when they say they don't want to sit down and watch Star Wars Clone Wars. because to me that's like peak Star Wars, and I'm like, if you're gonna watch Star Wars, this helps set up so much of the prequels and helps right. with so much of the understanding. Please watch Clone Wars, but get through season one. Push yourself to get through season one.
Yeah, because you get you've got to get through the newscaster who's talking about, and now we go back to our front lines where blah blah blah. Yeah. It's like you have to get through that, and then it just really is good storytelling. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, very cool. Next question. What voice character that you perform was the greatest challenge for you, and why?
Ooh, greatest challenge. Okay.
Like picking on one of your kids, I'm sure, but you know.
Yeah. So I would say acting wise was definitely Alita 1, because I had to go to some really dark places for that. But I would say like vocal technique wise, the stuff I had to do in God of War Ragnarok was just super intense. Again, you're never going to know who I am, but you killed me. I had to do this like crazy demon character, and it was just super gravelly and shouty. But then I had to do this like cultist. They called it the, before they changed the name, like in pre-production, it was called like the owl cultist. And it was these people that worshiped like an owl god. And so they gave all these like female metal singer references of like wanting this super high screechy sound. And so having to try and figure out that sound, that placement of wanting this super crazy, just shrill, non-human shrieky sound was definitely, definitely taxing.
I bet, yeah.
It took its toll, but you know, it's always fun when you're working with a great director on a great developer and just being like, is that it? No, let's tweak. Can you do a little more of this, a little more? And then you find it and you're like, yes, that's it. But that was definitely the most probably taxing vocally wise. Yeah.
All right. Very good. All right. Last of the fast fires.
Yes.
What's a universe that you haven't dipped your toes into yet that you would love to be able to play in?
I mean,
whether on screen or voiceover.
Yeah, I'm gonna. So I technically am in the Marvel universe. I did do some Marvel mobile game. So I guess I'm correct. In the Marvel universe, and I did do ADR for Black Widow and What If. So I'm technically in the Marvel universe, though not as like a named character, but I have yet to do anything sure. in the Star Wars universe. And I am very passionate about that. I was actually working on a Star Wars game that was based on something that was really close to my heart, and it got shelved with all the reshuffling of where Star Wars has gone with different game companies. And I was like, I remember I came in for my session. I was like, oh my God, I'm finally in the Star Wars universe. And then it was like, and now it's shelved permanently. And you're just like, no, because my two cats are named after, I have three cats, but two of them are named after Star Wars characters, one from Knights of the Old Republic, one from one of the Star Wars books. And I still consider Knights of the Old Republic one of the greatest storytelling video game.
It was amazing.
Video games ever. I mean, the story with Bastila and all of those is just
agreed. It's
so, my cat's is named Jahani. And then of course now I'm friends with the woman who did the voice of Jahani now, you know, 20 years later. But that is definitely a universe I still dream of being in, because I still blame my dad for the fact that I was not born and could not have been a baby Jawa in the original Star Wars, because all the other little Jawas were the kids of National Park Rangers, and I was born 2 years later. So I was still very mad at him that I could not be a Jawa. So still waiting.
Way to go,
on
the Dad.
Universe. So yeah, that's definitely going to have to be the universe that I am not in, that I almost was in, but that I am not in.
All right. No, if I could get my name on Star Wars somewhere, somehow, anywhere, it could just be in the end credits where it says I held a glass of water for somebody. I'd be fine with that. That's kind of the same thing.
Like Doctor Who too. But I know like Doctor Who, I'm not British, so the odds of me getting into the Whovian verse is not very promising. I was like, dude, put me in a Cyberman outfit. I'll stand in the background. You know, I'll be in a tiny little Dalek. Like, I'm cool. You don't need to see my face.
Right. Yeah. You don't have to see my face. You don't have to hear my voice. Just let me be there. So, yeah, I fully understand that. All right. Very good. Well, we have one last question for you, Lindsay.
Okay.
And we call this question our silly question.
Oh, yay. I love silly questions.
The rest of our questions have been oh so serious. But we decided to ask this question. Yeah. We decided to ask this question of our guests because we thought, and by we, I mean my co-host Kathleen, thought it was a shame that at a certain point in life, people stop asking you this question. Okay. And that question is, Lindsay Russo, what's your favorite dinosaur?
I really have to appreciate the Brontosaurus because, you know, it's like the Paleolithic, not zebra, what is the word? Oh my God. I'm blanking.
Giraffe.
Giraffe. There we go. Giraffe. But, and I don't know the name. I'm a scuba diver. I love scuba diving. I love the ocean, and not a lot has been done to study, the Paleolithic creatures that lived in the ocean. But I was reading an article in the Guardian, just a couple weeks ago that talked about, they just discovered this new ocean-based creature that is from, you know, the dinosaur era, that's like twice the size of a blue whale, which is the largest creature on Earth.
Oh, wow.
Because there's so few people who study the ocean and what's down there that, like, they really haven't dove, pun intended. They really haven't investigated all of the different sea-based creatures that existed during that era. And so reading this article about this crazy, ginormous sea-based creature was just like, oh my God, this is so cool. And I don't know the name of it. They just named it, obviously. But that was something that I thought was like, this is pretty epic. And then evolution's just crazy to see where those dinosaurs have translated into the modern day birds, or, you know, different shellfish and, you know, different types of things. Just really, really interesting.
All right. Well, very cool. All right, Lindsay, I just want to say thank you. I've enjoyed having you on the show so very much today. Where can our listeners go to find out more about you and any upcoming projects that you may have coming out for them?
Absolutely. Yes, you can find my website. If you spell my name right, you can find me anywhere. I'm the only one who exists, Lindsay Russo. I am on Twitter, X, whatever we're calling it now, Lindsay Twitter. Russo. I'm on Instagram, Lindsay Russo, Facebook. I try to respond to people when I see you. Instagram loves to hide those messages from people that you aren't friends with, so I don't always see it. But I do try to respond to people as much as possible. So yes, if you have questions, if you have anything, reach out to me, probably on Instagram or Twitter, and I will hopefully see your message and respond to you. That's also where I make announcements about upcoming projects. I've got a couple in the works that I can't talk about, obviously, that'll probably be released next year. So yeah.
All right. So thank you, Lindsay. We'll make sure that we get those links down and put in the show description and our notes down below for people to be able to look you up and follow you, because guys, there's so much, we just literally scratched the surface of Lindsay Russo. There is so much we didn't even get a chance to talk about. Yeah. Like I said, this could be an epic mini series of what Lindsay's talking about today. Anyway, but hey guys, just want to remind you that if you haven't done it yet, please click the button that's going to be popping up on the screen somewhere down below here. Editor John will put that in there for us. Anyway, that's to remind you to subscribe to our show, because it helps us to get amazing content for you guys to be able to listen to, share some laughs with, and get really cool guests like Lindsay Russo. She's freaking awesome. She's a geeky badass. Go check her out. But yeah, please subscribe. It helps us more than we can ever really begin to tell you. And Lindsay's got some really cool stuff out there as well. So but yeah, go check her out. And again, Lindsay, thank you for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this has been great. And guys, that's going to wrap us up for the FSF podcast. Goodbye.
Copyright 2024 FSF podcast. Reference any specific product or entity mentioned on this podcast does not constitute an endorsement or recommendation by FSF podcast. The views expressed by guests are their own and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. If you have any questions about this disclaimer, please contact us via email at info@fsfpopcast.com.